following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Hi, everybody. Coming up, Nicole tells your fortune looking ahead. So get out your crystal and stay tuned with Mistress Nicole. All dressed in leather, you won't forget her. You want to love her and you won't let go. Who's that woman, crazy woman, Nicole?
Welcome to a Friday. Ah, I love those words. And this has been a long, seemingly interminable week, right? With a lot of bad stuff going on. So the weekend is just about here. Not to say the bad stuff is over, but at least, some of us get to rest. Today is a very busy day for me because in addition to doing this show, I'm also guest hosting for Brad and Desi at the Bradcast. And in case you're wondering, because I sometimes forget to tell you what I'm putting on that show, what I did, because I just finished assembling it right before I came on the air here, is a repeat of the Ellie Mistal interview from about a week and a half ago from the 7th. Ellie Mistal is always great, and I thought that was a particularly interesting conversation we had about the Constitution, about Ellie's new book, Allow Me to Retort, A Black Guy's Guide to the Constitution. So that airs in its entirety. The only thing I edited out of it were, a few fucks and shits and bullshits, because that can't go on Brad's show. But aside from that, the whole thing is there. And then I actually thought I would have time to relay the entire story of Tanya, who previously known as Tatiana, our friend in Ukraine. And I realized that, this has been going on for 3 weeks. And so it's sort of an abridged version, but I'm going to give you guys the ending early because you're here, right? And so you may recall when we last met yesterday, I had not heard from Tanya. The last time I heard from her is they were driving to the Polish border, to the border with Poland, to leave. She and her friend and her friend's little boy, who happens to be her godson, and for those of you who are just tuning in who don't know what I'm talking about, I apologize. Let me back up a moment. So Tanya is a woman that I met. When I called her hotel in Kyiv, Ukraine, the date when I called her was, I believe it was the 28th. Yep, it was February 28th. And so the war had been 5 days going on. It had been 5 days since Putin invaded. I had, before it started, I called a different hotel and spoke with a clerk who I really feel terrible about because I have no idea how to get her. And she seemed unconcerned. She thought in Kyiv they were going to be safe, that all the problems were in the east, in the Donbas region, names we've come to know over the past 3 weeks. And so, I don't know. All I know is this woman probably says that some American woman called me and said that, there was going to be a war and I didn't believe her. I feel badly now. Anyway, so on the 28th, a few days into it, I thought, I know there are still people in hotels in Kyiv being bombed now. And so I found this hostel on a map. It was called Friends Forever, written in English. And I thought, all right, that's the place. So I called and Tanya answered it. At the time, she said her name was Tatiana, but now I know her friends call her Tanya. So we call her Tanya now. And we started a dialogue that has been going on for these last 3 weeks or thereabouts. And when we spoke yesterday, like when I came on the air yesterday, I hadn't heard from her. The last thing I had heard from her at this time yesterday was that they were, first, that they were on the road driving. She said, I'll drive up to the border and write to you. And I showed you the video of them in the car. And then the last message I got from her was still before 7 a.m. Eastern. She said, come to the border. So obviously they made it there. And then the entire day went by and I didn't hear another word. And I was a little nervous In fact, the last message I sent her before I hit the air yesterday was at 4:30. And I said, I know you have much more important things to do than keep me updated, but I'm worried about you. When you get a moment, please check in to tell me what's going on. Are you still waiting at the border? Were you able to get in? I'm thinking of you. Well, you know, the show ends at 6 Eastern. At 7:03 p.m., I get a message from Tanya. You're going to love this. See, I'm smiling today. I'm happy because she's safe. She wrote, good night, my dear. We are already with friends in Krakow. Three of my godchildren were waiting for me here. Children make me happier. Thank you for your concern. I'm shocked by what people from Poland are doing. They provide free car insurance for 30 days, distribute SIM cards with internet and free calls to Ukraine, distribute children's food, clothes, toys. I cry nonstop. And I wrote back, I'm so happy to hear that. Thank you for letting me know. I'll rest much easier tonight. I'm glad to hear that the people in Poland are so welcoming. That's great. And you didn't have to wait for days at the border, because she had told me people before her, you know, earlier even in this week, were waiting 2 to 3 days at the border. And I said, I hope you're able to sleep soundly tonight. I'm crying now too, which I was. Boy, last night when I got this, tears of joy that you are safe. And the thing that really brought the tears were the pictures she sent. So I'm going to try to bring this up so you can see. It's a funky interface. Telegram thing. But here we go. So here, this video that I'm about to show you is at Poland, and they're there, and with all the humanitarian aid, you can see a tent set up that, you know, is just a lot of people helping, giving them food. They're eating real food. They have a lot of volunteers there, right? And they give the little boy a juice box. Then the next one is here, just more, with all the food, all the, you know, they are set up at the border to take care of these immigrants. That little boy is her godson. His name is Mark. And he's smiling. He's happy. And you could hear the parents. I mean, even though I don't understand what they're saying, you can hear the good feelings in their voices. Here's another picture. They're showing all the clothes and shoes and toys for the kids, so that, and food galore, fruits and vegetables and water. And there are kids standing around just looking like, wow. Now, this is the story. I got to tell you the story. So I should go back to her thing, because she said, my little godson in peacetime drank a cocoa drink with marshmallows on a walk. Then after 12 hours of travel, he threw a tantrum and the female volunteers found cocoa, milk and marshmallows. I didn't expect this. And you could see they're giving this little boy, they found the hot cocoa and the marshmallows for this little boy, and they're taking such good care of him. This is really, really amazing. And he'll turn around in a second. You'll see how happy he is. I'm telling you, I got these videos last night and the tears were just streaming down my face, because this makes me feel really good. And it gets better. Hold it. So they're stirring up, putting more marshmallows in for him. All right. And, you know, the joy, the little things, that, you know, in life. And now he's going to turn around. Here, turn around and show us. And there's a smile. Just a smile on this kid's face. He's like, yeah, this is good. I'm happy now. And this was after a 12-hour car ride to get there. Right? And so he looks very happy. Oh, just heart. And then they get to the apartment and there are other kids there. And so Tanya sent me a whole bunch of videos like this. There are 6 children at this apartment. And what they did was play. They played and played and played. And it was just, you know, again, I could hear the relief in her messages. So she wrote, she sent me all, she said, people in Poland are just saints. And I wrote, thank you so much for sending these. I'm crying tears of joy. I'm so happy you're there. And that was it for last night. By that time, it was, you know, after it was 7:20 at that time. Then this morning, I wake up at 9 o'clock, I sent her a message. I said, I awoke this morning feeling much better knowing that you're safe. These videos are wonderful. I hope you're able to relax a little now. Sadly, I know that they bombed Lviv yesterday. So did you hear this? Lviv, the city to where, you know, so many people have fled because it was supposed to be safe. And boy, do I feel like an idiot because I called a hotel in Lviv yesterday. Not hearing from Tanya, I wanted to talk to somebody. And the woman was very nice. And she's like, same thing that I got from the other woman in Kyiv a few weeks ago. She said, oh, we're fine here. Well, today they bombed there. And so she responded to me. Tanya responded to me. She said, today a siren was tested near the city of Krakow. So they couldn't even escape the sirens in Poland. She said, I know about Lviv. My words are coming to an end. And then she said, my sister asks me to fly to her in Dubai. We are starting to think about it seriously. And then she said, let's devote the time that we have here to the children. We have six of them here. Now let's go outside for a walk. And it's great to know that there is no siren in danger here. Although there were sirens, it was only a test. So she did. And I wrote back. I said, going to Dubai is not a bad idea at all. I'm happy to see how well welcoming Poland has been to the Ukrainians, but they are overwhelmed by so many people needing help. And then I said, the children are adorable. It warms my heart to see them so happy. Is Mark doing better now? And obviously he is from the videos. And then she said, Poland is beautiful. I want to hug every passerby. And then, let's see, she gave me her sister's information in Dubai, her phone number and her name so I can call her. It's very, very late. It's like in the middle of the night there, so I'm not going to call her now, but I will later. Anyway, at 4 o'clock, just an hour ago, Tanya messaged me. Because I was trying to get her to come on today now that she's in Poland. And it's like, oh, you want to come on and talk to us? I've got a lot of people who are really, you know, worried about you and will be thrilled to hear this news. And so she wrote back. She said, my dear sister bought tickets for us three. We are flying on March 20th. And I said, oh, my God, that's wonderful. I'm so happy to hear that. She said, I'll fly to my sister and then we'll call. So hopefully we'll have both Tanya and her sister, Anastasia, on the phone on Monday. And she's going to Dubai. And I said, it's great news. And she said, I will feel much more comfortable with my sister. I'm not comfortable in front of my girlfriends. There are too many of us here for one apartment. We are seven people in one small room and another five people in the next one. So, you know, as I said to her, you need more space and a sense of normalcy. I said it'll be better for her in Dubai because Poland, as wonderful as the people have been there, is overwhelmed by so many refugees. And I think that'll help her feel more at ease. And so she sent me one more video. She said, yes, it's true. We were in the city center today. I'll show you this video because it's pretty lovely. We were in the city center today. Everyone is in humanitarian aid. Food, fruits, water, sweets, hot soup are distributed everywhere. It's wonderful, but when I see this, I cry. And I said, you know, I get it. I understand. I get it. It's, you know, it's, I'm sure for her, it's tears of relief and joy. And then she sent this video, which is just this street in Krakow, Poland. But you can see on this one store, there's a sign there. And the sign, of course, I lost the translation. Hold on. The sign says, I got to close this one. Sorry, everybody. The sign says, written in Polish, Krakow is all with you. And in Ukrainian, it says, welcome. So, you know, we can have a good weekend and feel really good that Tanya is doing well. And she's going to head out to Dubai to be with her sister. I'm so happy for her. I'm beyond happy for her. But that, you know, selfishly, no, I'm happy for her. Period. End of sentence. That's it. And now I'm back to worrying about the 40 million plus people stuck in Ukraine. Not that I wasn't worried about them before, but you know what I'm saying, right? Isn't that a great I mean, I love that we have a nice resolution by the end of the week. And so we can go into the weekend at least feeling good about that. Our person in Ukraine got out. She made it to Poland, and now she's going to join her sister in Dubai. Now, we're still worried about her husband, and unfortunately, her husband doesn't speak English, so I can't call him. Tanya will keep us up to speed on her. So let me tell you what's happening here on this here show today. If I'm a little scattered, it's because I am, because this has just been just a crazy day between, you know, getting these wonderful messages from Tanya and also doing Brad's show, in which I tried to tell her whole story, and I did. And here's the thing. The original audio for that segment runs, I don't know, like a half hour or 40 minutes or somewhere in there. And all I had left to fill in Brad's show was 20 minutes. So I really had to edit it down. I hope it makes sense when you listen to it, because I was running against the clock. But I think what I'm going to do is post the entire story. I'm going to have to put a new ending on it, because actually Tanya's message that they're going to Dubai in 2 days came in after I finished. So I'll redo the ending, and then I'm going to post that segment as a standalone, probably audio podcast segment that I'll put out with all the podcasts. I'll put it up on Patreon and the other sites where I think that's the only other site other than my show where I post anything. But anyway, it'll be just an extra Tanya story. So we'll do that. But so I'm kind of scattered today. Now, we do have a guest coming up in about 10 minutes. He will either be on the Zoom or on the phone. And at this point, I don't know which. So our guest is David Swanson. And those of you who've been around the progressive internet, you know, for a while, know David Swanson. In fact, I realized I met him about 15 years ago. My, how time flies when we're not having fun. It was when I was doing mornings, on the then progressive talk station in Miami, which of course doesn't exist anymore because it was owned by Clear Channel. And it's now the fourth sports talk station in town, because that was more important than a progressive talk station. And by the way, the sports talk station's ratings are no better than what we had. We at 940 Wins, the progressive talk station, did better than they do now in the ratings. Just saying. Anyway, it was back then when I was doing mornings there that I first met David Swanson. He actually came to town for an event advocating for the impeachment of George W. Bush for lying us into the war. And that was the start of a long friendship. He'd been on my show many, many times over the years, although I got to say, not so much recently. And I don't know why. There's no reason. We're still friends. We kibitz online and stuff. And of course, when I realized that, I want peace. I'm vehemently against war. I think war is really stupid. It's barbaric. There's no place for it in a civilized society. When I'm looking at people, innocent people being bombed, being incinerated, schools and hospitals and a theater where women and children were taking shelter, and the building was clearly marked children so that anybody from the air could see it, was firebombed, that's when, I guess, the mama bear comes out in me again. I want to protect those people. And I know we're not doing nothing. Okay, I know that all the sanctions, and there's lots of negotiations, and there's stuff going on. And in fact, today, let me see if I can't find this really quickly. Not too long ago, I got a notification of like a secret stash of weapons being sent. Where did I put it? No, I can't find it, of course. It's here somewhere. But apparently we transferred a lot of equipment to Ukraine somehow today. I just saw the headline again. I apologize. I've been scattered today doing, you know, three things at once. But yeah, so we are helping, But I can't help but think we need to do so much more, right? So, you know, then I get a message from David Swanson, who writes, you know, he's an author, he's an activist, he's a radio host. He hosts a show on Pacifica stations. And he's also, I think, the executive director of an organization called World Beyond War. And we've spoken to people from that organization on this program, too. I'm in alignment with them. I agree with them. But I got this article that he wrote, that he sent out. And, oh, so I got it. So he will either be on Zoom or on the phone. It all depends. He was speaking at a school today in Washington, D.C. He lives in Charlottesville, Virginia. So he said, I might not be home in time. So I said, well, if you're home in time, jump on the Zoom. And if you're not, here's the studio line. Just call and we'll do it over the phone. So I won't know for another, you know, 9 minutes or so until he calls in. But either way, we'll talk to David Swanson. But he wrote this article for World Beyond War just a couple of days ago. And it's the headline is 30 nonviolent things Russia could have done and 39 nonviolent things Ukraine could do. And though I appreciate the sentiment, it's very pie in the sky. Okay, things Russia could have done. I'll just read you the first few. Continued mocking the daily predictions of an invasion and created worldwide hilarity rather than invading and making the predictions simply off by a matter of days. Yeah, they could have done that. That's not how Vladimir Putin rolls. Second one, continued evacuating people from eastern Ukraine who felt threatened by the Ukrainian government, military, and Nazi thugs. Could have, but that wasn't his goal. His goal was to take over Ukraine. That, you know, David's 30 things that they could have done is in large part a reaction to the propaganda reasons that Putin gave for invading in the first place, which are complete and utter. And I didn't change my thing back. I wasn't looking for the rim shot. I was looking for
bullshit.
Thank you. That's what belongs on that button. Anyway, could have offered evacuees more than $29 to survive on. Offered them, in fact, houses, jobs, and guaranteed income. And then he wrote, remember, we're talking about alternatives to militarism. So money is no object, and no extravagant expense will ever be more than a drop in the bucket of war spending. That's true. But again, in order for any of these things, and there are, you know, 27 more of them, Vladimir Putin would have to really want peace. He doesn't. He wants to annex Ukraine like he did Crimea. So that's my problem with that part of it. And then the 30 nonviolent things that Ukraine could do says change the street signs. They did. Block the roads with materials. They did. Block the roads with people. They did. Put up billboards. They did. Talk to Russian troops. They are. Celebrate Russian peace activists. So let me get this straight. They're having bombs lobbed at them, and the Ukrainians are supposed to be dancing in the streets celebrating the Russian peace activists? You know, and then it's a lot of protesting stuff, and we'll go over it with David when he gets here. But again, this is how I disagree. I don't know what the answer is, but I don't think he's got it right here either. All right, a couple of things I wanted to share with you. Again, I was scattered today, and I'm, you know, so the phone lines are up. I'd love to know what you think. And we've got like a good 6 minutes until David Swanson arrives. So if you want to weigh in on anything, 954-889-6410 is the number, or you can Skype in. I'm Nicole Sandler. I want to play something for you that is not related to the war at all, but to our situation, our political situation in this country. I've never heard of this woman before, but I think she's known as the politics girl, and she's aligned with the Midas Touch guys. And I guess she has a podcast, but she put out this video. It's a short, you know, 2.5 minute video, but it's along the lines of something that I've been starting to write. And I'm just scattered. So I haven't had the time to pull it all together, but she got it. She nailed it. So let me share this with you. It's Politics Girl. And the name of this peace is Republican Party, who do you think you are? It goes like this.
Hey, Republican Party, who do you think you are? I mean, we get that you think rich, white, straight Christian people are the most important, and you will favor that demographic and those who cater to that demographic above all others. But you know there's a line, right? I mean, you clearly understand you don't represent the majority, which is why you attempted to illegally overturn the last election, why you're passing as many voter suppression laws as possible, why you keep voting against voter protections and getting dark money out of politics. Your lack of public support is why you've paid so much to take over our courts and buy our senators, why you put up with and now bootlick the MAGA movement. You know you can't win on ideas or values or even charisma, so you're going all in on power by force. Passing laws to silence anyone you see as a problem. You think you can break us? That you can tell us how to live and eventually we'll just behave? You call yourself the party of freedom, but you're trying to dictate how we raise our children? You're passing laws about what we can and cannot say, what we can and cannot teach, what we can and cannot read, what we can and cannot do with our own bodies? The word freedom shouldn't pass your lips when you're the party attempting to strip it from everyone else's lives. You dare to talk about the dangers of tyranny as you support a tyrant as he invades an ally in an active European war? You want the government to stay out of our lives, but you're writing bills to out children to their communities, to deny people their very existence under your strident rules of co-opted Christian morality? Mm-hmm. You want to charge parents with abuse if you don't personally agree with their parenting? And you have the audacity to screech about cancel culture when you're the party burning books and firing educators for teaching American history because it makes you uncomfortable, but you mock liberals for needing a safe space? Yeah. You preach First Amendment, but you silence minority voices? You've lost your goddamn minds. Do you think our opposition is so weak? Do you think you can just deny people their votes and their freedoms and their existence and we're just gonna roll over? You think you're the only people who take the idea of freedom seriously? You think you can just change the laws so they only apply to your values and your morality and people who think like you and the rest of us are just gonna take it? What makes you think we'll respect the laws or lawmakers that clearly don't respect us? What country do you think this is?
Yeah.
This is the United States of America, and we're the majority. We reject your backward, self-serving lawmaking and your picking and choosing of laws. This behavior might have worked 100 years ago, but that time is gone. You're done.
Ooh.
We're coming for you.
Hell yeah. Yeah, baby. That is Politics Girl. How awesome is she? I am going to have to check her out. All right, hold on 1 second, because I believe our friend David Swanson is in the Zoom room, and I just kind of screwed things up when I here we go. All right, now I can bring him in. All right, so I'm so happy. I guess he drove fast. let me get our Chirons up here, and I got to do one more thing. Sorry, this is the problem when you are your own producer and engineer and everything else. I got to get the shot up. But I see David's there. I can hear you too, David, even though we don't see you yet. Hi.
How can you hear me when I'm not saying anything? That's a good power you got there.
It's supernatural powers. David Swanson is an old friend and somebody I was thinking back to how long ago we met, and it was about 15 years ago. It was when WINZ was still a progressive talk station here in South Florida, and you came down for an event advocating for the impeachment of George W. Bush for lying us into that war. So it had to have been like 2007 or so, or 2008. I was fired in August of 2008, so that's how I know that.
I am still in, not your firing, the impeachment of George W. Bush, I am still in favor of.
Well, so am I. Absolutely. Without a doubt. So David Swanson is not only an activist, a peace activist, he's an author, a journalist, and a radio host. He's also the executive director of World Beyond War and campaign coordinator for RootsAction.org. He's written books, War is a Lie, When the World Outlawed War. There's a theme here. He blogs at warisacrime.org and davidswanson.org. But the war thing runs through everything, and that's why I wanted to talk to you today, David. And thank you so much for rushing home to join us.
Of course. Glad to be here.
We've got this war going on, in Ukraine. The thing that prompted me to actually get in touch with you was a piece you wrote for World Beyond War called 30 Nonviolent Things Russia Could Have Done and 30 Nonviolent Things Ukraine Could Do. And they could have done all these things, but, you know, starting with continued mocking the daily predictions of an invasion and created worldwide hilarity rather than invading and making the predictions simply off by a matter of days. I love that idea, but that's not how Vladimir Putin rolls, is it?
If you're asking me whether what has happened, it's a pretty straightforward question. If you're asking me whether I can imagine something different having happened and recommend it as a superior option, you know, yeah, of course. This would have been a better thing to do. It's not a,
of course it would have been
a crazy concept or an unusual one.
But knowing who you're talking about, I mean, I love these ideas. And if it were a sane, peace-loving person who didn't want to be at war, then these would be reasonable. But we're talking about Vladimir Putin, who's not interested in negotiating peace. He's the one who invaded Ukraine on what I believe are bullshit premises, his propaganda that he's going to denazify Ukraine. He's not interested in peace. He wants to annex all of Ukraine like he did Crimea.
Well, there's a whole lot in there that I could talk about for the next hour and
a half.
Sure.
I'll
try to touch a teeny bit of it.
Okay.
But you know, now that the past 3 weeks, the United States is in favor of prosecutions for war crimes, I think Vladimir Putin should be somewhere near the front of the line, along with George W. Bush
and
Barack
there with
Obama
you.
And Bill Clinton and Donald Trump and Joe Biden, you know, Tony Blair. For God's sake, why is he showing his face? You know, pack them all in and prosecute them all, impeach them all, you know. But when you have thousands of the top experts, the top diplomats, State Department officials, the current CIA director several years ago when he was allowed to say it, George Kennan, and every top U.S. expert on dealing with Russia in the Cold War saying, if you expand NATO, you're going to get a war. If you add Ukraine to NATO or even hint about it, you're going to get a war. Saying this for decades. And when you have Vladimir Putin, you know, I think we have to distinguish between insane actions and insane people, right? Everybody loves to say that when somebody has done something monstrous, they are an insane person and you cannot talk to them.
Right.
You know, where, you know, you could talk to the people who made the wars on Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, Syria, Pakistan, Somalia. You could talk to them and you can negotiate with them and you could reason with them about all kinds of things, but their wars were monstrous. When Putin put down in writing in early December, here are the 8 things we want, you know, enough is enough. Do these 8 very reasonable things. And they were the exact same things the U.S. demanded when there were Soviet missiles in Cuba. Right. And they are the exact same things the U.S. would demand if there was a Russian tank in Ontario. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's told go to hell month after month after month. Nothing whatsoever. This was the point of the article you're citing.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing whatsoever justifies mass killing and destruction.
No, nothing.
But the claim that we're dealing with an irrational monster and he'll only answer to force and we can't reason with him. This is what is the war propagandists say about every war from both sides. This is what the Russian media says about the president of Ukraine and the president of the United States. This is, you know, when the peace activists were going to the Secretary of State and the Foreign Secretary in England and saying, take the Jews out of Germany before they decide to kill them all.
Uh-huh.
They weren't told we can't talk to Hitler.
I'm going to interrupt you here a second, David, because you could keep going and I could let you, except what you're doing right now is whataboutism. I'm not clearing anybody for their past actions. What we did in Iraq and Afghanistan is wrong. What's going on in Yemen is horrific. There are war atrocities going on everywhere, and just war is an atrocity. But two wrongs don't make a right. I mean, I had somebody come at me. It's like, well, Russia's doing this with precision, pinpoint precision or something. Like, excuse me? And then his, in parentheses, he said, compared to what we do. I want to say
a bunch of stuff I agree with as if I don't agree with it. So what is it you're asking me that I'm failing to straightforwardly, pinpointedly, directly answer? Because I must have missed it.
Okay. First of all, I don't want to argue with you, Dad. I thought we could have a good, respectful, you know, debate conversation. I don't want to get ugly or nasty about this. I like you. You've been a friend for a long time. So we don't need to get nasty with each other. There's enough of that out there. I just don't understand. Maybe where we disagree on the premise. I believe that, you know, Vladimir Putin, as Russia, invaded this nation, not because of what they were doing to him, because as far as I can tell, they really weren't doing anything to him. He's making up propaganda about, you know, Nazis, the nation being overrun by, run by Nazis. In fact, the president is Jewish. His family was killed by the Nazis. He's not a Nazi. He actually seems like a really quite reasonable guy, but there are bombs falling on his country. I'm seeing a theater where children and women are taking shelter, bombed, even though it's clearly marked children, hospitals, apartment buildings. When he says we're only going to take out military targets, these are war crimes. I think all war is a crime, but what's happening is particularly ugly, and it sounds like you're saying, well, there's, you know, both sides are at fault here. Am I saying Ukraine is perfectly, you know, righteous in all their actions? No, probably not. But in this instance, they didn't do anything to justify this invasion. And yeah, I think Putin is nuts, the same way I think Donald Trump is nuts. And I was fearful for 4 years that he would go near that nuclear button. And that's what I fear with Putin. I'm afraid that, you know, it's the war is not going as he thought it would. He thought he'd waltz right in and take over Ukraine, and Zelensky would run, you know, get on the first plane out and say, okay, I'm out of here. You know, it's all yours. And that's not what happened. And so he may, who knows what he'll do next. That's what I'm saying. And it seems like you're going, well, we've done horrible things too. So that doesn't make this any better. I don't, and it doesn't excuse anyone's actions. And I believe you agree with me.
Well, what it may seem like I'm saying is, of course, not anything I've actually said. And I agree with pretty darn much everything you just said. Mm-hmm. I object principally to being, you know, framed as somehow disagreeing with it. The only thing I would caution about, you know, other than imagining people disagree with you on all the so many obvious things, is that when you declare a person nuts, I mean, what do I care if you declare a person nuts? I mean, particularly somebody who wages war, there's nothing mm-hmm. nuttier. But if the meaning of that is we will not negotiate, we will not negotiate peace.
Who's saying they won't negotiate? Wait a minute. Who's saying we won't negotiate? Not Ukraine. Ukraine is saying we'll negotiate, although I don't know what there is to negotiate. Putin wants to take over the country. Peace. What are they going to say? Peace? Yeah, and he's trying. I think Zelensky is doing everything he can to achieve that, to get Putin to see, and you're laughing. So what is he supposed to do? You say what they could do is, here are some of the things that you say, that nonviolent things Ukraine could do. They could publicly demonstrate for no Russia, no NATO, no war. They could document and show the world the impact of war. They could document and show the world the power of nonviolent resistance. Should they do that from the middle of Kyiv that's being bombed, from a library that's been blown up? I mean, really, you think this is an adequate response to what's being done to them?
I don't expect to get the necessary seconds to give an adequate response to that. So I think I would prefer to say nothing. You're reading a little excerpt from a long paper, part of which is things that the general people of Ukraine could do in certain ways, and part of which is things that the government of Ukraine could do, which are two very different questions.
Okay, many of the things they've done, you know, you say change the street signs. They did. Block the roads with materials. They've been. Block the roads with people. Put up billboards. Talk to Russian troops. They've done all of that.
What is the problem, Nicole?
I don't understand that you're saying this is how they could react, but they've got bombs raining down on them. For the last 3 weeks, I've been in close communication with a woman who owns a hostel in the middle of Kyiv, and I've lived this through her eyes. And, you know, as she hid in the basement because there were bombs raining down on her city, as they fled Kyiv and went to some remote village and took refuge there. And then the air raid siren started there. And then they left there and went to a city. And finally she got out to Poland. This is what's happening to the innocent people in Ukraine, and you're suggesting that they announce a commitment to the Minsk II agreement, including self-governance for the two eastern regions. You know,
now you've jumped to one thing out of a long list of things.
Right,
that
there are 30 things
could do.
There are 30 things,
which I think is a very important thing that the Ukrainian government darn well ought to do as soon as possible. I get that you're eager to disagree about something, but I think there's a whole lot of things we agree on. One is that the war is criminal and immoral and horrible, and it sucks to live under falling bombs. It's hard to find, in fact, a human being who disagrees with that. It's also, you know, pretty sensible that it would be good for the war to end.
Yes.
And one way that you don't make a war end is to escalate it. Is to send in more and more weapons. I think Stephen Kinzer's op-ed in the Boston Globe yesterday, to the effect that Ukraine has been hit two big serious blows recently, a Russian invasion and U.S. weapons shipments, is right on target. I think the way that you end a war, sooner or later, if you survive it, is to negotiate a peace settlement. If you do it sooner, fewer people are dead and fewer buildings are destroyed.
Right.
Why not do it sooner? Right?
But, and who's not wanting to do it? As far as I can tell, Zelensky is asking to do that. And every time they negotiate, you know, humanitarian corridors to get people out or supplies in, the Russians hit them with bombs. If you're Volodymyr Zelensky, what do you do? What would you do? You're in office today. It's not that far-fetched. He was an actor and a comedian before. So
I would follow the advice, never acted upon by him, of Woodrow Wilson, or racist monster and nutcase as he may have been.
Right.
But he publicly advocated as one of his glorious 14 points for public diplomacy. That is, make public what you're asking the other side for, publicly address the other side's concerns, come to an agreement publicly. This is a democratic, small d, thing to do, right? Well, Russia is doing this, has been for months. Russia
really?
Is saying,
what are they
are
saying?
The things.
What do they want? You tell me. What do they want? Because what I can tell they want is you know, Putin wants to put the band back together again. He wants to resurrect the Soviet Union. It's what it appears to me. And I'm afraid that, you know, my friend who went to Krakow said today there was a test of an air raid siren there because they're afraid they're going to come there next. Don't you think the Ukrainians have a right to defend themselves? They're being bombed.
You understand, Nicole, that you just asked me a question and then answered it yourself by telling me how evil Putin is and then switched to a completely different question.
Okay,
how am
then,
I supposed to...
back up. You tell me what you want to answer.
Well, why does it upset you that Russia is saying publicly the criteria they want.
Tell me what it is, because I haven't heard it. That they want the Donbas region, that they want, but they don't want to stop there. They want Kiev. That Vladimir Putin wants to annex Ukraine. He said Ukraine is not a country. It's a territory, and it belongs to Russia. That's what he's saying.
If you're willing to call Russia's bluff on their threat to use nuclear weapons by escalating the damn war, why are you not willing to call their bluff on meeting their demands and making some demands of your own and seeing whether they will agree to peace?
And that's what they're trying to do. And everything I hear is that every time they go to the bargaining table, they walk away and Russia says, "Niet. Niet. No, we're not bargaining. We're not making these. They're the ones who invaded, aren't
they?" But Ukraine never tells us. And this, you know, there's blame for this, I'm sure. The lies with NATO and the United States and the right-wing nuts in Ukraine that might overthrow Zelensky if Russia doesn't do it first. But for whatever reason, Ukraine never makes public what they want.
They want Russia to leave them alone. They want Russia to exit their country.
Yes, well, this is an obvious part of a peace agreement, is Russia leaves Ukraine. But there needs to be more than that. There needs to be reparations. There needs to be apologies. There needs to be a distance between the Ukrainian border and the closest Russian weapons.
Okay.
From who?
Who do they need to apologize to? The Russians? The Ukrainians need to apologize to Russians? To the Russians?
The opposite, Nicole. You're
I'm trying to figure this out. No, I'm trying to understand. You're saying they need to apologize. Who? Ukraine needs to apologize for Russia invading them?
No, the opposite.
Okay. Well, you think Putin is going to apologize to Ukraine for invading the nation that he won't admit exists?
I think that the Ukrainian government today should make public their willingness to meet and go beyond Russia's demands and lay out demands of their own and tell the world what they are. And I think you're goddamn right. They should include a demand for an apology, as well as reparations, as well as humanitarian aid, as well as disarmament near their borders. But they should agree to the very reasonable demands being made of them by Russia.
Which are? Tell me, because I don't know. I'm being honest with you. I don't know.
Talking, Nicole.
I'm sorry?
I can't tell you when you're talking.
I'm their asking. Latest, yes, sorry.
Their latest set of three demands are that Ukraine be neutral, that Ukraine be Switzerland, Finland, Austria, be a neutral country, which is... Yeah, everybody ought to have wanted that for years, right? That Ukraine recognize Crimea as part of Russia.
Why? Wait, can I stop? Why should Ukraine recognize Crimea as part of Russia? Because Russia did the same thing, six years ago, however many years ago, my math sucks, and took it over by force.
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, Russia right now is blowing up buildings, slaughtering families, is threatening world famines by destroying crops. The casualties of the horrific takeover of Crimea at the utmost extreme high estimate, get ready, count them, six casualties. Now, every human being is precious, but in the past quarter century, with millions of corpses lying on the ground from war after war after war, this notion that the seizure of Crimea is the worst threat to peace in the world is just insane. You know, should the people of Crimea have the right to vote is the question, right? Because nobody, not a living soul on earth, imagines that the people of Crimea would ever vote for anything other than joining Russia. Should the people of Quebec have the right to vote to leave Canada? Should the people of Scotland have the right to vote to leave the UK? I don't know. You can say no. It's a reasonable position.
If you want to do it that way, vote. I mean, look, should the people of Texas vote to leave the Union? Please go. But don't do it by force.
Yes, but one of the proposals in the list that you excerpted from earlier was that the United Nations hold a revote overseen by authorities that will be respected by all. Okay. There's no quest. Nobody would ever propose this from the West because they know damn well how the people of Crimea will vote. This is the problem, right? But it ought to be, you ought not to have votes with soldiers on the street.
I agree.
That being said, you ought not to pretend that they weren't already there. You ought not to pretend that it's the worst catastrophe of the century in a decade that includes, you know, wars in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Pakistan, Somalia, Yemen, et cetera, et cetera. It's just insane. Put it in a little context. But why? Why now should you reward a vicious, immoral, criminal warmonger with Crimea being recognized as part of the Russian country? Because if we all die in a nuclear war, it's not going to satisfy anybody to somehow magically look back if they could and say, well, at least we stood up to Putin.
Okay, I agree. I agree. But
not dying in a nuclear war is better than anything.
I understand that. But alternatively, do we let this man blackmail the rest of the planet because he's got nukes? So
no,
he's got nukes. So I'm going to
demands that should have been met years and months ago. And you make demands of your own so that everybody wins and everybody loses. But you stop the damn war.
Okay, but do you really think this is the man who didn't try to solve their differences peacefully by sitting down and negotiating? He went in with bombs. So you're going to say that all of a sudden, you know, Ukraine's going to go, wait a minute. Okay, we don't like you're destroying our nation. You're killing our people. Let's now talk, and you need to apologize to us, and you need to do all these things. And sure, you can keep Crimea, something you took by force. Now just leave us alone and you think that'll be enough? He did it once. He was successful doing it before. Why won't he keep doing it? And it sure seems that that's what he's trying to do now. What I don't understand is how, you know, somebody's the aggressor. They come at you. Somebody's coming at you on the street. They want to beat you up for whatever reason. They don't like you. And you say, wait a minute, let's talk this out. Like two adults here. Well, if the one guy is bound and determined to beat you to a pulp, anything you say is just going to piss him off even more.
You know, I debate professors from West Point Military Academy all the time about, can you ever justify a war? Mm-hmm. And some of them, the ones I respect more, and it's a more fruitful debate, they talk about actual wars. They defend, you know, the first Gulf War, or they defend Israel's wars in Palestine. Or they pick some war and defend it as justified. But a lot of them refuse to mention any wars. They want to talk about muggings and your grandmother in a dark alley. And, you know, it's a nice story because, of course, push comes to shove, I'm going to defend my grandmother in the dark alley by whatever means I can. Right. But it has very little relevance to how we settle wars, avoid wars, de-escalate wars, and create a system of governance where we don't have governments resorting to wars all the time. And the personality of the one individual at the top of the Russian government doesn't eliminate the need to end this war.
I agree.
You know, so what can we do to
take
end
out
the
Putin?
War?
Someone needs to go and whack Putin. That's what we need to do. Seriously. The same thing I'd say about Trump if he did what I was afraid he was going to do for 4 years.
You're in favor of assassinations of Russian and U.S. presidents. Yeah.
Not Russian and U.S. presidents, Vladimir Putin. And if Donald Trump had gotten us into a war that I was afraid he was going to do, yeah, him too. Not just to take out the president, but somebody who wants to launch an illegal war.
The only U.S. president in decades not to start a new war. Do you want to assassinate
him? Oh, wow. So now you're okay. So you're with the whole Trump. Glenn Greenwald gang. So you're now a Trump supporter.
I'm now a Trump supporter because I stated a simple fact about a monstrous fascist pig. Yeah.
Okay.
What the hell? My God. How many seconds would the glee last when Putin was murdered, you know, and what would come next?
I think maybe his people would rejoice that they're finally free. Maybe Alexei Navalny could get out of jail and become president. Once you get rid of the horrific dictator, then maybe democracy can.
Do you watch the videos of Alexei Navalny murdering a rat symbolizing immigrants? The guy is worse than Trump in terms of fascism. He has the support of about 3% of people in Russia. He's a fantasy of Western propaganda concoction. He's not relevant to Russia, the actual place on Earth. This is the problem with fantasies ginned up for the U.S. public. The RAND Corporation, the National Endowment for Democracy, these people wanted this war, and they wanted the Russian public to rise up and overthrow the Russian government. Of course, I want everybody's public to rise up and overthrow their governments, but I want better governments as a result.
Sure. Right.
And whether you're going to get better governments or worse ones, and trust me, what the National Endowment for Democracy and the RAND Corporation want is a worse one. It depends a lot on how it's done. And assassination doesn't have a good track record of creating democracy and human rights on this planet, Nicole. It has a tremendous record of generating blowback.
Right. But you got a society now where people, and don't give me the whataboutism. I know people were arrested here during the Black Lives Matter protests and everything. But you hold up a white sheet of paper in Russia and you're dragged away and you can spend 15 years in a Russian prison. I believe, and I could be wrong. What do I know? I'm just a woman living here in Florida. There could be the masses finally saying, finally, we're rid of this dictator, and they could bring in a democracy.
But because I'm opposed to assassinations, I have to be in favor of arresting someone for holding up a blank piece of paper.
Okay, you know what? We're not getting anywhere. David Swanson, I really appreciate you coming on today. I appreciate you engaging. I don't think we made any progress here because, for a number of reasons. But I thank you for joining us. Really do.
Really weird, Nicole.
Yeah, really weird. Thanks, David. Nice to talk to you. It's been a while, and I guess now I know why. That was kind of sad. I honestly don't know what to say about that. I thought he was more reasonable. But see, this is where we've gotten. And maybe I'm unreasonable. Maybe I'm the unreasonable one. I'm astounded. Putin invades Ukraine. Ukraine was not gunning for Russia. Ukraine was doing nothing offensive. And yet their entire nation is being bombed to smithereens. And let's see what he says they should do. Celebrate Russian peace activists. Protest both Russian war-making and Ukrainian war-making. Demand serious and independent negotiating with Russia by the Ukrainian government, independent of U.S. and NATO dictates and independent of Ukrainian right-wing threats. I think they're doing that. Document and show the world the impact of war. I guess that's while they're ducking the bombs. Document and show the world the power of nonviolent resistance. A great thing to do, but probably not very logical when bombs are raining down on your country. Invite brave foreigners to come and join an unarmed peace army. An unarmed peace army so they can get slaughtered? Because those Russian soldiers are not unarmed or wanting peace, except the ones who are freaking out going, we were told we were going to be peacekeeping force. We weren't told we were going to be the aggressors. Fuck this shit. And quite a few of them have done that. Announce a commitment to never align militarily with NATO, Russia, or anyone else. Well, maybe if they're put in a position where they can do that, they would. But right now, they're fighting for their lives. Invite the governments of Switzerland, Austria, Finland, and Ireland to a conference on neutrality in Kyiv. You think they're going to go to Kyiv right now? You know, I'll post this. I'll post it on the blog where I post today's show. So you can read the whole thing. there are some really good suggestions among the 39 nonviolent things Russia could have done and 39 violent things Ukraine could do. But Russia wouldn't do those things. They could, but Vladimir Putin's in charge. He's not doing any of this shit. And the Ukrainians could, probably though not when bombs are raining down on their homes and hospitals and schools. God, I was in such a good mood before. Maybe this just was not a good idea. Well, hopefully we'll hear from Larissa Alexandrovna. I haven't heard back from her since yesterday when I suggested she come on Monday. But she is from Ukraine. She's from Odessa, and she's devastated. So I'd rather hear from her than from some armchair peacenik. And you know what? I would call myself that. I'm in favor of world peace. And that to me means getting rid of Vladimir Putin because he's the madman waging war. And from what I understand, and maybe I'm wrong, but what I understand is that there are lots of people in the government, in Russia, who are livid, who are not happy that this is going on, that think the war needs to stop. Because you know what? The war needs to stop. It needs to end. You know, I'm thrilled for my friend Tanya that she made it out of there alive. What about all the millions of people who are still in harm's way? I want to save them too. All right. With that, it's a weekend. And try to forget the last half hour and go enjoy your weekend and think about Tanya's story. Okay. All right. I'll see you tonight on the broadcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Wow. All right. Well, that was surely energetic. All right. I'll leave you with the news and I'll see you over at the broadcast and back here again Monday. Thanks for listening. And sorry about that. Bye.
For Nicole Sandler, what's news from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Russia's assault on Ukraine is continuing mercilessly, now striking the city to where millions of Ukrainians have escaped. Lviv, a beautiful city filled with history, less than 50 miles from the border with Poland. The New York Times reporting that Russian forces targeted, quote, the only enterprise in Ukraine that refurbishes MiG-29s for the Ukrainian Air Force. It figures, I called a hotel in Lviv on Thursday and had a nice conversation with the reservation agent who answered. She told me that all is quiet in her city.
Everything is okay. It's safe right now in our city, in Lviv. So our hotel is work right now as usual, but our spa doesn't work.
I see.
Swimming pool, gym, it's not work.
My thoughts are with her today. Further south, the city of Mariupol is still under siege and suffering 50 to 100 attacks each day. Mariupol is the city where Russian forces earlier this week bombed a theater that was being used as a shelter for some 1,300 people, mostly women and children, who fled their homes. The Russians bombed the location despite the word children written in huge letters on both sides of the building. A rescue effort began on Thursday. Rescuers were very pleasantly surprised that some survivors emerged. They found that the walls of the inner bomb shelter had survived. There are reports that 130 people so far have been rescued. Separately, at least 21 people were killed when a missile struck yet another school, this one near the northeastern city of Kharkiv. Officials in another northern city, Chernihiv, said that 53 civilians were brought to the morgue over the past 24 hours. The increased shelling has come as reports suggest that the Russian advance has largely stalled, particularly in the north near Kyiv. Russia has widely denied targeting civilians. Yeah, right. But casualties were also reported in Kyiv today after debris from a downed rocket sparked a fire at an apartment building. In addition to the Ukrainian lives lost since the attack began, there are reports that thousands of Russian troops have also been killed. In fact, Ukraine is attempting to return some 1,400 bodies of their killed fighters to Russia for a dignified burial. Russia now appears to be struggling to resupply those forces as troop morale is reported to be dropping.
Meanwhile, the Ukrainian resistance is holding on, backed by world leaders who are condemning Putin's aggression. In President Joe Biden's latest comments on Putin, he called him a, quote, murderous dictator and a pure thug. On Thursday, the House of Representatives passed a bill to suspend normal trade relations with Russia. It's the latest effort by U.S. lawmakers to inflict economic pain on the Kremlin for its unprovoked invasion. Arnold Schwarzenegger taped an emotional plea to the people of Russia, speaking straight into the camera and telling them that their government is lying. It's been pointed out that Schwarzenegger is one of only around 40 Twitter accounts followed by Vladimir Putin. Now, the price of a barrel of oil has dropped precipitously in the last few days, but the prices at the pump haven't noticed as they continue to rise. Republicans are blaming Biden for the rising cost of gas, showing their ignorance about how the free market works. House Democrats are now strategizing to redirect the anger where it belongs, the oil companies. So, Friday morning, the House Natural Resources Chair, Congressman Raul Grijalva of Arizona, is calling for the CEOs of three of the big fossil fuel companies to testify April 5th at 1 p.m. They'll highlight these companies' approved but unused existing drilling permits, as well as recent calls where executives have boasted about the record profits they're reaping. From the I Told You So files, it's back. Not that it ever left, but in Washington over the past week, former President Barack Obama and second gentleman Doug Emhoff, along with at least 10 members of Congress, have all tested positive for the coronavirus. In parts of Europe and China, a new highly transmissible variant called BA2 is spreading. And what history tells us is that when Europe surges like this, the United States typically follows suit. Stay safe, everyone. Just because they did away with the mask mandates where you are doesn't mean you can't still wear one when you're out and about in public. You see, only about 1.7 million people in the U.S. live in counties where the CDC still recommends universal indoor masking. But Dr. Fauci told CNN on Thursday that the U.S., quote, generally follows what goes on in the U.K. by about 2 to 3 weeks. Well, in the UK, cases are rising due to the increased transmissibility of this variant of the virus and the waning immunity of the vaccines. Yesterday, we told you that Pfizer had already applied for clearance for a fourth vaccine dose. Well, now Moderna is also asking the FDA to allow a fourth dose for any adults who've gotten an initial vaccine booster. I know what I'm doing this weekend. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.